This is Nolan Dalla, and you're listening to the Top Fair Home Game Poker Podcast.
Welcome to the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, bringing you tales, tips, discussions, and great interviews, led by two veterans of the poker home game scene. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Robbie and Bruce.
As we creep towards the spooky time of year, I had a thought about the phrase, trick or treat. Everyone recognizes it as the mantra you uttered at a neighbor's door to get candy and other goodies, but it could also apply to poker. Think about when a big bet or raise is made and your gut tells you it's a bluff, but of course you're not sure. Instead of sighing and saying, I call, how about proclaiming trick or treat? Trick if there really was no bluff and you lose. Treat if you sniffed out the bluff and you drag a pot. Try it the next time you're in that situation. Today, along with the latest from Robbie and myself, we've got a great guest, Jesse Sylvia, poker pro and runner-up in the 2012 WSOP main event. He's got some very interesting things to talk about, so let's get going. Chelsea, you're always a treat. Please get us started.
Hey, how you running? Beats, suckouts, triumphs, and tragedies from last week's home game play.
Well, so Robbie, how are you running?
I'm running in place, Bruce. I'm not running ahead. I'm not running backwards. I'm not falling behind. Just sort of like, sort of staying in place. You know, not doing too much exciting stuff. Having the home game once every couple weeks. It's sort of a, you know, Jewish high holiday season around here in Israel. So the schedule's a little bit wonky and it's tough to get a game together in between all of the holidays and days off and all that sort of stuff. But when I do get to play, it's always fun. You know, I certainly try to make the most of it, both, in terms of playing hard, of course, at the table, and having fun hard, like in a very good way, just trying to really have a good time and maximize my times at the tables. You know, nothing really crazy to report, no huge wins, no huge losses, but pretty much, I'm sure our audience members out there, here in Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast land, sort of feel the same week in, week out, just another week or two. You know, that's how I've been running.
Well, if you're running in place, you may not be getting anywhere, but at least you're burning calories, right?
There you go. I'm certainly trying to do that. And if anyone else out there in Top Pair Land wants to tell us about all those calories they've been burning, or a great home game story they want to share with us, or just to shout out and say hello, you can always do that at Top Pair on Twitter. Just look for us on Facebook. We're there. Look for the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast.
And, of course, we love emails. So feedback@toppair.net.
Bruce, how have you been running, sir?
Well, I've been – my running's been in a recliner, I guess. I still have been having some things to juggle around to try to even get back into the swing of going to poker games. So it's been the longest hiatus I probably had in 7 years, but I think that's probably
somebody
a good thing.
Find Bruce a game. Please invite this man to your poker game.
But still enjoying it, still watching some on the TV. Is the WSOP, the November 9 starts creeping towards us. The ESPN's got their coverage and that, so I'm definitely sure engaged. And of course, doing this wonderful podcast every couple of weeks is keeping me in touch with the poker industry, too, so.
For sure.
But just wanted to let people know and remind them we are still right in the middle of our next round of giving away two uncut sheets of those J Design cards. We post them every week on our podcast and on our homepage, so you can see what they look like. But they're great to hang in your poker room or great to give away for a gift. We're kind of sneaking up on that time of year. So, and again, we make it really simple since October is kind of our anniversary month. All we need you to do is just send us an email, feedback@toppair.net or the other social medias, and say, happy anniversary. So it's pretty simple. Just happy anniversary. We'll put you in the drawing, and after a couple more shows, we'll be giving away another set of two of those sheets of uncut cards.
From J Design.
From J Design. Good old Jason. So
yeah,
we really appreciate that. Hey, I can see we've got Jesse Sylvia that's ready in Studio B. He's our guest today. So after a couple of messages from our fine sponsors, we'll see what he has to say.
It's hard to have a home poker game without playing cards, and there is a difference. Top Pair is proud to feature and recommend J-Design cards. Made of durable plastic, the right thickness for easy shuffling and dealing, plus a unique look with a pip placement, artistic backs, striking face cards, and a huge variety of colors. Give your home game players something to talk about by playing with the distinctive J-Design cards. Check the Top Pair homepage, toppair.net, for a link, or go to classicplayingcards.com. Come and order yours today.
After 7 years and over 270 episodes, it's safe to say we know about home game poker, and everyone agrees a good playing surface is essential to a successful, enjoyable game.
CBO Poker Tables has the perfect playing platform for any home game setup. If you're using an existing table and need that cushioned, no-slide surface to keep the game moving smoothly, BBO has the portable poker party mat with non-slip rubber backing, a sleek foam playing surface, and it's machine washable for those inevitable party fouls.
Step up to the pro poker game tabletop for a professional platform that sits on your existing table. You'll swear you're sitting in a casino or a card room.
The Poker Pro Poker Game Tabletop also serves as a great service for game night with friends and family members.
Of course, BBO has dozens of options for standalone tables, from the basics to models with all the bells and whistles, completely customizable to enhance any man cave or game room.
Visit bbopokertables.com for a great overview of everything available, and you'll be surprised how easy it is to find or design just the table for your next home game. In most cases, shipping is free, and they also have an international presence to service customers in Europe, Asia, and worldwide.
BBOPokerTables.com. Enter the code TOPPAIR when you check out for an extra 5% discount on their already competitive prices. Proud sponsor of the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, with a link on our homepage, BBOPokerTables.com.
Look who we found hanging around. Let's get a mic for him and see what he has to say.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Our guest today is Jesse Sylvia, a poker pro, runner-up in the 2012 main event, and a popular poker personality. Jesse, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hey, Jesse, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
Cool. So we're going to jump right into it. A lot of people are most familiar with you, with your runner-up finish in the main event. But let's go back to the beginning. How did you first get hooked on poker? Are you one of the rounders guys? Are you a money banker boom guy? Or did you learn with grandma around the kitchen table?
I was kind of a little bit of everything in there, except for grandma was more like my parents. I watched Rounders with my dad, and that was like when I was really young. I think I was like 14 at the time, and I always really loved games before that. I played cribbage and gin rummy and different card games with both my parents, and we watched Rounders, and there was this game that people played that they won money in. And I was like, whoa, this is like the coolest thing in the world. So I always thought that that was this really amazing thing, but I was like 13 or 14. I had no idea how it actually worked. And if you watch the movie Rounders, you think that it's all about looking at somebody in the face and then knowing right. what he has. So I played with my friends a couple times, and I couldn't figure out what they had by looking at their face. So I just thought I was bad at poker. That was like 3 years of my life. And then around 17, Moneymaker won the main event, and I watched that on television. And they kind of, Lon and Norman Chad, I mean, obviously, like, you know, they're really good commentators with, like, jokes and stuff like that. But they do a good job of also showing that there's math behind what's going on. And once you see that there's, like, a specific set of strategies in math, like, that was something that I could hold on to more. And that was something that that seemed a lot more feasible. So that really, like, reignited my interest in that a lot.
Interesting. Well, you did like a lot. You were very into math, like in school, and did like AP calculus and stuff, or just sort of it's not just tells.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely was more proficient at math than most subjects. I did do AP calculus. I was kind of a slacker in high school and a little bit in college. And so I ended up taking a lot of math classes because it was the thing that came the easiest to me. But yeah, I definitely, anytime I can put math behind something, like math or logic is two things I grasp onto a lot because they're, I like things that work in absolutes to some extent. When people have arguments a lot, especially like political arguments, it really often turns into like, well, these are my feelings. And like, that's always something that it's like, fine, those are your feelings. But if you're going to like, argue about something or you're going to address something, you need to use logic and math. Cause that's the only way we can like, you know, bring anything out of this that is an absolute. So I guess that, because of that, math and things like that always kind of made sense to me.
Very interesting.
No, that's great. Well, as you know, our podcast is home game based. We kind of carved out that niche of the home game players and the home game hosts. And so we always like to know about your home game background. It sounds like you started background playing games with family. But how about, did you have buddies growing up that you were playing games? Yeah, you said you had some of that, and we're trying to read them. And any college days or any regular games that you were in that you attended maybe before you went to Vegas? Or
yeah, so I think I was 17, between 17 and 18. Yeah, I was 17 when I saw Moneymaker. So the next year I was a senior in high school, and we played a lot of, I guess, home games, although we didn't even call them that then. We just played poker in my friend's garage because that was, like, the only form of poker that we knew at the time. And I just, like, loved it immediately. I think the first time I played, I won, and then, like, the next three times I probably lost, and I just came home so excited, like, thinking about hands and how to play thing, like, how to address certain spots and stuff. I didn't know any of those words yet. I didn't know that I was addressing spots. I was just trying to figure out what I did wrong and what I did right and what other people did wrong and stuff like that.
And like a big win or a big loss was like $20 or something?
Yeah, yeah. I think the first time I won like $15. And I was like trying to do math in my head. Like if I could win $15 every week when we play, then I could, you know, buy X, Y, and Z. Because I was in high school and, you know, money wasn't really... The only thing you were worried about buying was like a cookie when you got lunch or something.
How about when you went to college? Did you continue that kind of stuff? I know I think you went to college on the West Coast, right?
Yeah, I pretty quickly found like everyone else in my freshman class at my college that were interested in poker and started playing like little home games in dorm rooms and like the lounge area and stuff like that with people. And we played a little bit bigger, but like a big win there would be, you know, like $50 or $70 or something like that. But I was like the only one in that group probably that was like reading poker books and you know, not watching videos, but like, I guess like reading forums and maybe if I could find like old episodes of something, watching that. I was never trying to like, at that point, be a professional. I was just so enthralled in this thing. It was just something that was really fun. And it was like, for me, it was a way to compete too, because I played a lot of sports in high school, but I wasn't the fastest person I knew. I'm far and away not the tallest person I know. Like a lot of sports were kind of out for me at some level because of, I guess, physical limitations. So all of a sudden there was this thing that you could compete on a mental level. And I was like, I don't think that anyone's so far above me on a mental level that I can't compete with them. So that like reignited this passion where, you know, I was always trying to win whenever I played as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now that's cool. It sounds like your foundation was live play and home game type of play. I mean, a lot of people kind of in your same era, their foundation is strictly online. So it's you actually started with the in-person playing, and that sounds like to at least build the first level of the foundation of your poker career and poker knowledge.
Yeah, I think part of the draw of poker is that you're competing with real people, and also you're playing for money, which is kind of unique in the sense that because you're playing for money, you know that the other person is trying as hard as they can and you're trying as hard as you can. There's no like really, there's no excuses like, oh, I just didn't care.
Right.
So like, I think playing in person is really important when you start out for a lot of people because, you know, you kind of want to see your competition and you want to, the interaction's like really important for, I guess, instilling that bit of competition in you.
Yeah, great.
Well, between this stage that you're referring to, we've been speaking about for the last couple minutes, and then, you know, when you sort of burst onto the scene and all of a sudden, oh, Jesse Sylvia, everybody knows him. At some point, you sort of decided to turn pro. I guess this is, you were in your early 20s or so?
Yeah, I really decided to become a pro when I finished college, which I think was when I was 22 mm-hmm. and a half or something around there. I spent an extra semester at college because I took a semester off, so I might have been 23. I actually had a good amount of success in college by that point. I had done pretty well in some online poker tournaments. I chopped the Sunday Million and some other like dailies and stuff, and I had won like a good amount of money and saved a good amount of money and paid for a lot of school with it. And I was finishing school and I was moving back to the East Coast of Boston, and it was kind of the height of the recession. And I wanted to be a writer. I've always wanted to be a writer, which is weird because it's very different than poker, math, or any of that stuff. but I really wanted, my dream was to be a writer. And so I was going to just sort of, you know, find a job that made some money while I wrote. And then I moved to Boston, and it's the height of the recession, and there are just like no jobs available. And it's like one of the most educated cities on the planet. Right. And, I was like, why am I going to try to compete with people for a job when I have this other thing that's going really well and I'm, you know, I'm making more money from it and I can choose my own schedule and stuff. So I just basically made the decision when I finished school, I was going to try to be a professional poker player and see how it went. And I was fortunate that I had like won a decent amount of money and saved some money so I could pursue that and not be like banking on winning money on any given month. Like I had enough saved that I could, you know, have like backup funds for myself.
You could weather the down times and the scarce times. That's great. That's smart thinking.
Yeah. At that point, I had run up bankrolls and gone bust so many times. I had some idea of bankroll management. I kind of like forced myself into learning it because that's kind of the learning process, though, is, you know, you get okay and then you try to beat like a higher stake and you lose it all and then you get a little bit better from that and then you try to beat a higher stake. And at some point, you're like, maybe I should figure out just how to have money, first of all. And then I should go back to the poker thing.
Right.
Right.
Well, again, you know, when you're going through this process and learning and stuff, you know, you're not going at it alone, as evident. A lot of people may know or may not know, when you made that final table of the World Series main event in 2012, you had a bunch of close friends and housemates that you frequently played and discussed poker with. So, you know, I guess between, you know, the ages of whatever it was, 22 and 26, you became close with other, you know, professional hopefuls and stuff?
Yeah. At the point that I made the final table, I was living in Las Vegas, and I had my roommate who I talked poker with all the time and a bunch of friends. It kind of went to back to when I was living in Boston. I lived in Boston for about a year and a half, and I was living with like a few of my friends who were like my best friends growing up and like some of my like best friends I'd met in like the last few years. And they were all like kid, like kind of hippie kids going to like art school or like schools for music, which was awesome, like just amazing people. But I had nobody to talk poker with. And I could tell that that was kind of hurting me after about a year. I just felt like the people around me that I was playing with were getting better and I was just sort of staying the same, maybe getting a little bit better because I was still like reading and watching videos, but they were getting better a lot faster. So I think 2010, I decided I needed to meet poker players. So I tricked them a little bit, not tricked them, but I like set a trap where I found this really nice, like, baller apartment for the summer at World Series. And I went on the high stakes forum on 2+2. And I was like, hey, I have this baller apartment, who wants to throw down money and stay with me for the series. And,
wow.
Yeah. And I was like, this will be sweet. I'll have a great time. And like, I'll learn from these guys and get better and stuff.
Cheap lessons, right?
Yeah. Which is funny because I found out, like, the other guys who ended up going to the house had the same idea to some extent, like the same plan. But I found three guys who, you know, contacted me and sent me money, and two guys showed up. One guy actually paid for his part of the apartment and never showed up. We followed his progress, and he was winning a lot in tournaments, so I guess he was just content with not going to the series that year. But yeah, it was pretty funny. But the other two guys were a friend of mine, David Zemel, who's a very good high-stakes heads-up pro. And the other guy was Russell Thomas, who 2 years later took fourth when I took second at the main event. So that was, like, pretty crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. That has got to be, you know, I think, you know, obviously getting, you know, the runner-up in the 2012 main event was fantastic and certainly gave you notoriety. But that backstory, like you say, of the three people on the table that you were really pretty close with, I mean, that's got to be unique. Obviously, you must have learned a lot from each other, or your plan worked as far as bringing them into, you know, coaching you and helping you along. So did that affect your play at all on the final table, knowing that, you know, these guys were friends that, you know, you couldn't maybe be quite as cutthroat, or does that all just, you know, lay on the rail and when you're on the table, you're on the table?
Yeah, I think that's a little bit more of when you're on the table, you're on the table, because you know that one thing that you'll find is common throughout most of the professional poker world is that we're all very competitive people. You'll see it when, you know, when everyone's hanging out and you're playing ping pong or something, or making, like, even really small, like, $5 prop bets on stuff, there'll be, like, very, like, cutthroat competition. And so when you sit down at the table, like, you know that they're trying their hardest to win, so you have to try your hardest to win. So I don't think friendships affect very much at the poker table for most of us. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I know for me, like, if my friend, you know, bluffs me in a big pot, we're still, you know, nothing's going to change in that way. It's just I'm going to be a little peeved that I let him bluff me, but that's about it.
All right. Well, you traveled a lot, and after, you know, you win a nice big score like that, you know, a few million bucks, you traveled a lot, and then, you know, you sort of moved back to Vegas. Is there any – I mean, and you're still there now, right?
Yeah, I actually moved after the series. My girlfriend Ashley and I moved to California for about a year, and we kind of like missed our friends in Vegas, and we missed Vegas. And every time we'd come back from traveling, we would stay at our apartment in California for like 3 days, and then we would be like, "Let's just go to Vegas," and we'd crash on our friend's couch. So the next year we moved back.
Yeah, gotcha.
And gotcha. We've been back for like 4 years since then.
Right. Is there any specific place you enjoy playing most when you're there?
In Vegas?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Bellagio is kind of my home. When I was living in Vegas prior to final tabling the main event, I mostly played at the Bellagio. I was like primarily a cash game player at that point. When I made the decision to be a professional after college, I was like, well, I had just chopped the Sunday Million like 6 months earlier. And I was like, well, I mean, that was a gigantic tournament with like 7,000 people. Like, I'm never going to run this well again and do something like that. So I better start playing cash games. And then, you know, 2 years later, I chopped like the other, like the real life Sunday Million. And I was like, oh, okay. You can't run that good again.
Well, right after you got your finish there in the 2012 WSOP, you got a sponsorship from 888 Poker and were one of their pros for a couple of years. What can you tell us about being sponsorship? What were the benefits and what were some of the drawbacks?
There really weren't many drawbacks in my mind. Partially because, I mean, you have to do like some interviews or like maybe do like a photo thing or something. But like, I love that kind of, like, I love talking and I don't mind, you know, taking pictures. So that wasn't really a drawback to me, at all. I think, I mean, we had to travel for specific tournaments, but there were tournaments I was excited to play. So in my mind, it was just like a big positive for the most part.
Well, what do you miss the most?
There was really cool camaraderie. Sometimes, you know, poker is a very solo sport, I guess. It's all on you. And and you know, you have your friends and you get each other, you support each other and your friends, but when you can always travel with this one group, you become pretty close and you really support each other a lot. And you it's hard. When you're hyper competitive, you also have this thing where when somebody else has a big score, you're psyched for them, but there's also this little pang of jealousy that you feel too.
Right.
And the more time you spend with a person, the less of that pang of jealousy you feel, because the more you feel close to them and the more, you know, that person you're just so excited for. So, we had like built this group of people that you're just like super excited whenever they did well. And that was a really cool thing.
That's really cool. Oh, one other thing, you know, one of the people, you know, who I, it seems, at least from everything I've seen on social media, with whom you're pretty close. You know, I think of Jesse Sylvia, I immediately associate it with, you know, another big name, Vanessa Selbst. You know, would you care to sort of tell us how you two first became friends and, you know, how your connection with her has developed over the years?
Yeah, sure. Vanessa and her wife are both just like really awesome people. I hired her to be my coach for the final table because at the time, and I say at the time just because she doesn't play that much now, I'm sure that she still probably is, but she was like, I thought in my mind, she was far and away the best at winning final tables. It doesn't hurt that she comes in with the chip lead a lot, but she seemed just extremely good at playing out final tables. Her results, you know, it's a small sample, but her results were really good. I think at the time, and maybe still now, she's won half of the final tables that she's made, which is insane when there's nine people at a final table to win half of them. And she also just seemed to do things at final tables that were really good all the time. And so she was just like far and away the person that I wanted to have coach me. For having the chip lead at a final table, it just seemed perfect. Also, we had like a really similar image at the time because I'd done some crazy things that got televised. So I was like, oh, she knows how to deal with this sort of image really well. So anyway, so we she was coaching me a bit. We met up at World Series Europe in between making the final table and playing it out. And we talked hands and stuff. And then she called me and she was like, we need to do like a lot of work. And I was like, yeah, I agree. And she was like, well, she was like, what are you doing before the World Series final table? Like, are you going to be in Vegas? The five diamond tournament's happening. I was like, yeah. And she was like, well, where are you staying? And I was like, oh, I was going to stay with my friend who was my backer at the time at his house. And she was like, no, just stay at my place. Like, we have a guest room and you can, and I just only hung out with her maybe like five or six times when she offered this. She was like, I have a guest room.
Wow.
Yeah, you and your girlfriend should come crash and we'll play tournaments during the day. And then as soon as we both bust, we'll go back and watch, you know, like video or like go over hands or whatever. Like, we'll just be studying all the time. So I was like, that sounds
That's a really
amazing.
Generous offer. Wow.
Yeah. So we did that for like at least a week, I think. And I guess like just during that time, we realized that we're very similar people. We, I don't know, we have like similar interests and we just liked each other a lot and became really close friends. And then we stayed in touch after the final table played out. She was actually, when we moved to L.A., Vanessa and Miranda were living in L.A. at that time. So we went over and like had dinner with them or we'd meet up wherever. I don't know, we just like... Just like the four of us just became really tight. And it's like, it's rare when you have poker friends, just because you're so honed into this game. It's rare to have poker friends where you spend a majority of your time not talking about poker. And we don't spend that much time even talking about poker because there's like so much other fun stuff to do.
That's really awesome. I'm sure a lot of our listeners, you know, home game buddies and stuff, you know, they shoot the shit about pretty much everything around the table. And, of course, their friends away from the table as well very often. So I'm sure that's something they can really identify with.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like, that's funny, too, because, like, the poker table is, like, the one time I don't talk about poker. It's kind of like a no-no to talk about poker at the poker table. Like, you know, you talk about golf or football or whatever's going on.
That's cool. That shows a real talent, in my opinion. You know, was obviously you're a great player and an analysis of poker hands and strategy and things like that. But that shows a talent for you finding the right people, you know, at the right time, you know, and it's not like using them because it's a mutually beneficial, you know, synthesis you've got going with each other. But it's cool that you've been able to find these right people that have helped you.
Yeah, I've also been pretty lucky that I encountered some of them. Like Russell's a good example. I just was looking for people to talk to, and I happened to get a guy who I just think is like, he's probably one of the most analytically intelligent people I've ever met in my life. So that was like a huge stroke of luck. Whereas like with Vanessa, like I knew who I was trying to hire and I knew she was incredibly smart. So that was more, less lucky, I guess, that she ended up being as smart as I expected her to be. Actually, she ended up being smarter than I expected her to be, which is really insane because I expected her to be really smart. She just like, I remember her one time, like, I was with my friend at dinner and he had a coach at the time and she broke down a hand that she admittedly played really bad in the 100K. At least she felt at the time like she played it really bad. And, she broke down why she did it. And, even having done it like something incorrect, like her breakdown afterwards, she, like, I think she got up to go to the bathroom or something, but she was away from the table and he like looked at me. He's like, huh? He's like, I think I should get a different coach. Like it was because whoever was coaching him at the time wasn't like, you know, after having talked to her, he's like, whoa, there's people like this smart. Holy crap.
Wow.
So well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Russell, by the way, is like, that kid is like I was super lucky to have found him and to have like talked strategy with him earlier in my life. That guy is like, when we were living together in 2010, he had just gotten a job as an actuary with this insurance company. And I kept telling him he should play poker because he was like, I was playing poker professionally and he was like considerably better than me at the time. And so I was like, yo, you should be playing poker. Like you should have a job where how smart you are is, you know, compensated correctly. And he was like, yeah, but this job's pretty steady and it has like great, benefits and stuff like that. So he went off and he worked for this insurance company. I think the first year he worked for them, he found a flaw in one of the algorithms that they were using and he saved the company something like $60 million.
Oh my God.
And he got like a $2,000 bonus for Christmas. And like, literally like the minute we made the final table, he quit his job.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's it, huh?
Well, a couple other people that with whom you've become you know, pretty friendly, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention them, of course, are you know, Poker Hall of Famer Linda Johnson and Women's Poker Hall of Famer Jan Fisher. They were kind enough to reach out to you and make this interview happen in the first place. You know, how did you come to know them, and you know, how often do you guys get to see each other?
Actually, I met Jan. I was playing a mixed game tournament at the World Series. I think it was like the horse, like the 1500 horse or something like that. I've been trying to get better at the mixed games. I've been dabbling around in them and I was playing with her and, I don't know. We were just like the whole table. The mixed game tournaments are really fun because they're limit. And so people, they don't like when you play no limit, you kind of go in your shell and you're not trying to like let people get reads on you and stuff. When you're playing limit, nobody worries about that stuff because even if they got this sick read, they'd save like one bet. And so everyone just becomes like more relaxed and they just, you know, they talk a bit more and it's just like the whole atmosphere is different. So whatever. So we're all hanging out and talking and, at some point Jan was like, hey, I think you're like, you know, you seem really nice and stuff. You should come and talk to our poker group. They have this, poker group that meets on Wednesdays. And you know, they talk about all sorts of different poker related stuff, but they often have different speakers come in and talk about their experience at a tournament or something that they're interested in now with poker or whatever. And so I went in and I kind of like told my story and answered some questions. And then they asked me to come back and do some hand histories from my final table. And so I had just final tabled a high roller in Australia. And I actually thought I played like two or three hands in the final table really bad. So I was like, I don't really want to do hands for my final table, but what if I brought in hands from this tournament that I just like played horrendously? And they were like, that would be awesome. So I like, I came back and did like that. And then I think I went back another time and talked about some hands or something. But yeah, I just like Jan and Linda were always like really supportive of me whenever I talk. Cause I just feel like in those spots, I just get way too analytical and talk for way too long. And people are looking at me with these blank stares, like, who is this kid? And they're like, no, 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 they're just, like, trying to take it in. They were just really supportive of like making me feel really confident about going back and stuff, which was really cool.
Yeah, it's I am actually a member of that Wednesday poker discussion group, even though I've never actually attended, but they've let me be a member, and I read their emails. They get really intensive with email threads as far as discussions and that. And that's really where you kind of hit my radar. I mean, obviously I knew about your 2012 victory, but they were so complimentary as far as your discussions that, you know, like, I think they even made a video of one of the presentations and made it available to the other members that maybe couldn't make it or that wanted to review it. But they said that they learned more and got more insight into a lot of the things that you went in into than a lot of things, a lot of the guests they've got. It's a great group every Wednesday that, man, it's been going for 8 or 10 years. But, you know, I don't know how many. I think normally 15 to 20 people show up. They probably have, you know, 100 or so on their roster, but they get together in this kind of non-threatening, non-competitive environment and discuss that. And they were highly complimentary. It made me wonder, you seem to really have some affinity toward poker coaching or poker teaching. Have you ever thought of doing that or adding that to your list of things that you might want to try include in your
routine? I do a little bit of private coaching, mostly like one-on-one stuff. And I did consider doing some like group things, but it's always odd doing that because I don't know, you have to be careful with the information you're giving out because you don't know where that information's going to go. Like if you teach one person some small thing that you think that other people are missing, like, hey, in this spot people just never do this. And they tell like one other person, whatever. But if you teach like 8 or 10 people that, then they go off and they tell like, you know, one person each or two, and those people tell, all of a sudden it becomes exponential a lot faster. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there's like, mm-hmm. It's always kind of a weird line that we walk because I love talking about poker. And I love like discussing it. But at the same time, like I always fear that I'm going to take something that somebody else taught me and give it to someone and sometimes like charge a price to give it to someone. And that doesn't really feel right either. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. So it's always, I go back and forth on stuff like that. And when I do coaching, I try to stay with the things that I myself have figured out rather than going to stuff that other people do. But then you feel like you're holding back something. So then you have to like walk that fine line. So generally I try to make sure that if we discuss something like really cool, I'll be like, hey, can I discuss this or not? But it hasn't come up too much.
Well, that says a lot about your character. That says miles about your character that you consider that and recognize that line and the side of the line you choose to stand on. That's great. Congratulations. Kudos
for
that.
Oh, thanks. Well, I didn't come up with that on my own. I think Vanessa kind of instilled that because when she was working with me before the final table, we would talk about something in depth for a bit, and then she'd be like, by the way, you can't tell anybody about this thing. And I'm like, oh, no, don't worry, I won't. And then a couple times, like, it, you know, came up, and I almost, like, discussed it. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And so, like, you know, it's just that made me, like, full-on realize, like, hey, there's stuff that, you know, people are kind of giving you this. I mean, I'm paying for it. So, right. You know, to some extent, she knows that she's getting compensated. She knows like she's doing it with a chance of it getting out into the world or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. Like I do think about that a good amount. And then also it's hard because, for the amount that I want to charge, to give out certain information that I think might be like worth a lot of money. I feel bad charging that amount to some extent, and unless somebody's already playing like really high stakes, because I know that that's like, you know, a sizable amount of money to them. So it's kind of mm-hmm. odd. There was a really good mm-hmm. interview with Ben Tollerine where he talked about mm-hmm. coaching and how he just thought that people are paying way too little for coaching, and that's why he doesn't do coaching. He's like the best. He's like the top online cash game guy. Like top mm-hmm. three probably in PLO and in No Limit. And, he just like makes all the money. And he was like, yeah, I would probably start my coaching fees at like 20 grand an hour. And like, I don't expect anyone to pay that much, but you know, that's what I would want to give away. Like the stuff that I think that I know that other people don't.
Well, coaching and commentating are certainly a couple, different things. And, thankfully, it's not exactly the same audience. You know, coaching is a smaller audience. Commentating is a much larger audience. And, as you mentioned, you've done some televised poker commentary. And as you mentioned earlier in the interview, you did originally want to be a writer. So, those two things sort of jive with each other. You're sort of expressing yourself. Is that something that you sort of see yourself doing a little bit more of, in the future of, having sort of an ambition to be the next, Lon McCarron, I guess the next great Lon McCarron?
Yeah, I don't know if I could ever be the next great Lon McCarron. I really think that him and Norman are and the WPT guys as well, Mike Sexton and Vince. I just think those guys are just really good at their jobs. The more I do commentary, the more I think that I'm just impressed by how well they deliver their jokes and just like their banter and how they jive off of each other and stuff. So, but I do really like doing commentary. It's kind of a cool forum to project some of my thoughts, at least whatever ones I can slip in between analysis. And I've had a lot of fun with it, and I would definitely do a bunch more in the future.
Do you just kind of wait for them to call you, or do you actually kind of put feelers out and go, hey, I see you're going to be televising this. I happen to be available and would love to join.
Most of it's been them coming to me. I really like doing just like random live stream commentary. I think the first time I did it, I was at World Series Europe in 2012, and they were like, hey, if you ever want to stop by and do commentary, just jump in the booth. And I was like, cool. So I like showed up the next day and did a little bit, and then I showed up and did a little bit more. And then when I was in Australia the next year, I did some there. I did a lot at the World Series as well, some of the live streams they did there, which was really cool because David Tuckman does a lot of those live streams. And sure. All the ones at the series and then most of the ones at Europe and Australia. And he's, I think, really, really good at his job. And he was really good at giving me direction. We would talk and then we'd go on break and he'd be like, hey, man, that was awesome. Your analysis was good. What you should try to do, though, is put it in the shorter sentences so that, if I need to interject with, oh, now this hand is happening, you've kind of gotten through most of that thought. And then you can add another thought on top if you have more time. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I started working with that concept. And he was just like really great at pinpointing the things that would make me better at speaking and analyzing and all that. So that was really cool. Anyways, I was doing the commentary in a live stream in Australia, and I made some jokes that I think some of the other guys liked a lot. And I bumped into Maury when I was walking out. Maury is the owner.
Maurice Kandani, right?
Yeah, he does poker productions. And he was like, hey, I thought you did really good in there. We should do something sometime. And I was like, okay, cool. And then maybe a year and a half later, he was like, hey, we're looking for a commentator for this 500K tournament that we're doing at the Aria. And I thought it'd be cool if you came in and tried out for it. So I was like, okay. And I got off the phone. I told my girlfriend about it. And she was like, oh, cool. So you're going to try out? I was like, yeah. I was like, and I'm going to get it. Because I decided if I was going to go, to L.A. and try out for this thing, I was going to, give it my all. And, I didn't know who else was doing it. But, I know I've talked a lot in my lifetime, and I'm pretty good at talking. So I was like, I'm going to get this. And I, really prepared for it and stuff. And, I watched the clips that they wanted me to commentate over a bunch of times. I got my thoughts together and everything. And I went out there and at the end of it, they seemed really positive, whatever. They said, we'll call you. A day or two later, I think this guy, Zach, who's, he was producing the show. He's awesome guy. But Zach calls me up and he's like, hey, man, we wanted to see if you'd like to do the show. And I was like, yeah, I would. That'd be great. He's like, cool. And we started talking. And after a while, he goes, he's like, one of the things that made us pick you is you seem really together with it. You prepared and stuff. He was like, we knew at the very least, you would take it really seriously. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. Cause that's the first thing I've really went after, that involved homework, And,
right.
Somebody noticed that I tried hard at it. So I was like, maybe I should have been, doing my homework for the other things in life in the past. But so I did that. I did it for like the 500K, and then I did it for the 300K, and I would definitely do a lot more. And maybe you're right. Maybe I should. I know you formed it as a question, but now I'm thinking maybe I should be more aggressive about trying to get those sort of jobs.
Yeah, well, trust me, from somebody that has spent a good portion of his professional career in the radio business, your voice is just fine. You don't sound – everybody hates their voice. I hate my voice. I mean, I have people all the time say, oh, you got such a good radio voice or whatever. I listen to my voice recorded and went, man, there's nothing here. So, you know, don't let that –
All right, fair enough. Sure. I like your voice too, so.
There we go. But one thing I can tell, you know, we know – no one really knows what Norm and Lon and Mike and Vince make, but I'm pretty sure they don't make, you know, $821,811, which is what you won at the main event at the WPT Borgata last month. Congratulations. You know, I look back, I looked at Hendon Mob, and of course, I mean, you had the big score as a runner-up in 2012 at the main event, but, you know, I look back, you know, through all the way back to 2008, and I saw that this was your first ever tournament win, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That was my first tournament win.
That's got to be a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, it was weird because it was a lot of feelings at once. I spent probably the last like year and a half thinking a lot about how I've never won a tournament. And obviously, like, you know, it's hard to win a tournament. There's a lot of people in them, but I've had like a bunch of shots where I had seconds and thirds and stuff, and you know, I started to reach this point where I was like, I really want to win a tournament. To the point where like I would, whenever I hung out with Vanessa, I would like needle her and be like, what's it like to win a tournament? And then she would like needle me back and be like, oh, it's great. You know, you set out to do something and then you do it. And I was like, oh, thanks. So I don't know. It was weird because the way that final table played out, like how quickly we got to heads up, the fact that me and another guy who didn't even have average stacks going in, like, we're heads up in an hour and a half. Like, I was just shocked by all the stuff that sort of happened. And so I have this shock. And then I also have, like, this immense desire to win a tournament. So I'm just, like, very focused in. So I thought it would just be, like, you know, like, excitement when I won. But a lot of it was, like, relief. Because I just, like, was really, really dialed into, like, we need to do this and we need to finish it off and win. And I don't know, so I felt like it was a lot of relief, a bit of excitement, and just kind of like a lot of shock that it actually sort of happened. It was really cool too because they brought out the trophy and they put it down, and what they do with the WPT is you get a trophy yourself, but they have like a bigger version of the trophy that's like humongous,
right.
And it has all these panels on it, and each panel is like a winner, and
right?
Yeah. And I look at the trophy and I see like Negreanu's name for when he won the same tournament in 2003 when I was in college, or 2004 when I was in college and just watching it on TV. And, or maybe it was 05, either way. I was just watching it all on TV and I saw like somebody else's name from that era and I was like, holy crap, like I'm going to be on this trophy. And it was like, that was like the goosebumpy moment when that happened. And then I started smiling and I couldn't stop smiling for like 3 days.
That's amazing.
Well, now you know what it feels like. I'm sure you'll want to chase
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, no, now I text Vanessa and I'm like, what's it like to win two tournaments? And she's like over it, you know? So she's like, I don't know. I haven't had that feeling in a long time. Like, ask me what it's like to win 10 tournaments. I'm like, oh, screw you.
Well, I actually uncovered an article in April of 2014 that was in Card Player that featured you. And what I really found is I think the last paragraph of the article showed your attitude towards being an ambassador for poker and your views on making poker grow. And to me, that fits right in with what we're doing here with the Home Game podcast and trying to get people involved and engage the, you know, tens of thousands of people that play in home games every week. So I just wanted to read this last couple of paragraphs and kind of get your feedback on it. But it was great. It starts out, Sylvia wants to continue being a positive ambassador for the game. He believes that it's up to poker professionals to help the game grow. And this is quoting you. What does it mean to be a good poker player? Be friendly to amateurs. Take off your headphones and interact with new players. Talk about anything but poker.
It's a competitive game, obviously, but the games are getting tougher because we're creating an uninviting environment for beginners. The number one reason why the games are dying is the recession, but we can still do our part. So, man, that was great, you know, because I think that's the case with a lot of your people, your contemporaries that are playing, is they get the headphones and they get the hoodie and you know, you could drop over for a heart attack and they could care less, you know, they're just so dialed in. So that's
thanks.
Great.
Yeah, it's actually funny because I play a lot of cash games in Vegas, mostly at the Bellagio, but like Aria and the Wynn. And the hoodie headphone thing really doesn't exist at the, like, especially at the higher stakes. You really don't see that ever. Everyone's done a very good job in the high stakes area to maintain a fun atmosphere. We never, like, it's, you know, the talk, like I said before, the talks about golf or like whatever, like whatever sports on television, and no one ever wears headphones, and everybody kind of, it's just like people do a really good job of making like a fun atmosphere. And then tournaments are where you see a lot of like the hoodie, headphone, like scarf, whatever sort of thing. And that's, you know, so that's good. We've made some steps in the cash games, and maybe we need to make really more steps in the tournaments.
When you say high stakes, it's like 25, 50, no limit and up, or higher than that?
No, like that area. I think anything over 10, 20 gets played in the high stakes area.
Mm-hmm.
So usually 10, 20, 10, 20, 40, whatever.
Nice.
You know, and I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier about the mixed games. That's really where I first ran into Jan and Linda. They used to host some tournaments in Mesquite twice a year. And that's kind of, you know, two-thirds of the way between here and Vegas. So I'd go down, and I met them there. And the tournament, we'd always have a 6-12 horse game in the evening. And sitting around playing 6-12, which is obviously the lower stakes, but like you say, horse, which is mixed games and limited format. And I'm sitting at a table with, you know, two Hall of Famers, you know, the Linda in the Poker Hall of Fame and Jan in the Women's Poker Hall of Fame. And I'm thinking, where else could I get this experience of interacting with these people? And they were just friendly and chatting and telling jokes and that. And that was some of my funnest time playing poker. So I agree with you that it's fun. And I think mixed games kind of lend themselves to that.
Yeah, limit is a wonderful environment for sure. There was they really haven't had the game go off in a while, but there used to be one table that in the high stakes area at the Bellagio that would always have the limit players at it. It was always the limit game. And every other table would be like a lot more serious. And you look over at the mix or the limit hold'em game, and they're playing for big stakes. It's like 150, 300 some nights, but they all have a drink and they're all like just talking and joking and like cracking up. Cause like, you know, what are you going to get a sick read and like save one small bet? It's just like, they're not as concerned about it.
Right.
Hey, well, Jesse, thanks for spending the time with us. We surely appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know you're getting ready to head out on the road and that. So before we wind it up, is there any last thing you'd like to leave with our listeners?
No, I feel like the last point we made was like the most important anyways. Just, you know, kind of try to keep it enjoyable and always enjoy it when you're playing.
Awesome. If people want to hear more from you, where can they find you on social media?
I'm going to try to start writing again on my website, which I haven't done much on lately, but Twitter's probably the best way. I tweet a good amount. I'm Mr. Jesse James 888 on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And your website is what?
MrJesseJames.com.
Nice. Well, check it out.
All right.
All right. Well, once again, thanks for taking the time, and you've been a great guest. We'll keep up with you, and you know, the door's
great.
Always
thank
open.
You.
We might have you back.
Back
here in the future.
It's been a pleasure getting to meet you, Jesse. Thank you very much.
You too. Thanks a lot.
When we get back from commercial, I have a fun little story to tell you about the Leibowitz boys.
Seat open, table one. Hey, wait a sec. I know this guy. He sat on my left yesterday. Ah, I wish I remember how he played.
You should have taken notes.
Oh, come on. I'm not bringing a notebook to the table. I'll look like a fish.
You don't have to. There's an app for that. Poker Notes Live. Notice a tell? Want to keep track of your live poker sessions? Use the Poker Notes Live app to tag and classify your opponents. Record your wins and losses and improve your overall performance at the poker table. Poker Notes Live.
Get it now on Google Play and the App Store. Don't ante up without it. Brought to you by CardPlayerLifestyle.com.
As a poker home game player with over 1,500 games attended, I can safely say poker players all have a healthy ego and take pride in their individualism.
EBO Poker Tables has a great way to express that pride and allow you to stand out and let your identity shine through.
If you have a family crest, a favorite sporting team, a passion for a hobby besides poker, a heritage that's dear to you, or an identity with a region or nationality, let your pride shine through with a custom playing surface on your home game table.
It's easier than you think. EBO Poker Tables has a team of in-house designers and graphic artists that can turn any symbol into reality and integrate it into the perfect custom table all your poker pals will be talking about.
Maybe you're involved in a fundraising or a charity that uses poker tournaments as a funding endeavor. Maybe your company has regular poker nights for team building or as a reward for completing a big project.
Whatever the reason, if a custom table with professional graphics will help you make a statement, EBO Poker Tables is the ideal source to get the perfect result at a surprisingly affordable cost.
Visit bbopokertables.com for a great overview of everything available. In most cases, shipping is free, and they also have an international presence to service customers in Europe, Asia, and worldwide.
bbopokertables.com. Enter the code TOPPAIR when you check out for an extra 5% discount on our already competitive prices. Proud sponsor of the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast with a link on our homepage, bbopokertables.com.
One outer.
So, you know, Bruce, I talk about my dad's game a lot, you know, the one with the mixed game and the wild games. And, you know, we kind of have like a core group. And one of our core members, longtime members, is his name is Morris Leibowitz, right?
Okay.
So we just that's Morris Leibowitz. And, you know, he's from South Africa, great guy, you know, wonderful guy, life of the party, as we say. So recently we had another new member join the group, Chaim Leibowitz, no relation, right? So what do you call it? So we're playing, you know, it was a couple of weeks ago, we're playing around at my dad's game, and, you know, an hour goes by, 2 hours goes by, and both Morris and Chaim, they're losing a lot. You know, they, you know, bought in quite a few times, right? So, and this is like, you know, Chaim's first time joining the group. So Morris, he pipes up in the middle, you know, like after the end of the hand, he goes, the Leibowitz boys aren't doing too well tonight, huh? So Chaim goes, it's my first time. What's your excuse?
Makes sense. Makes sense. Yeah.
All the cards have been dealt for this episode of Top Pair. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and entertaining. Robbie and Bruce will be happy to have you join them for our next show. Just a reminder, we love your input. Contact us via email at feedback@toppair.net. Give us a follow on Twitter at Top Pair and like our Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast Facebook page. After all, we're not always right, just 99% of the time. For a more in-depth look at the Top Pair Home Game Poker Podcast, including access to past episodes, topics to be covered in the future, and links to information mentioned in the show, log on to our website at toppair.net.